Good morning. It is 10:01, July 7, 2026. This is an informal hearing on case number PU-26-98, which is Otter Tail Power Company tariff update. Decision that we have pending in front of us. And I'm Randy Christman, joined by Commissioners Sherry Haugen-Hoffert and Jill Kringstad. I don't have any opening comments before we get rolling on it. Commissioner Haugen-Hoffert, do you?
Good morning, everyone. I guess my opening comments on this is I think it's going to be pretty informative. We have a lot of questions because some of this, I'm surprised it's in this document versus a rate case. So I think we'll be looking at very detailed, explicit examples and information. So my only question is if we go through each tariff update, if there's questions, we can address it at that time.
For sure.
Okay. That's all I have.
And Commissioner Kringstad?
I don't have any opening comments.
Okay, so I want to emphasize an informal hearing. Good morning. This only involves undisputed information. If disputes arise, the hearing will have to be suspended, and a formal hearing will then be scheduled. We'll start with opening comments from the commissioners, which we've already done. In a moment, we'll go around the table and the attendees can introduce themselves into the microphone, including like job descriptions. Helps us direct questions to the right person. Get that on the record, and then we'll just have the applicant proceed. And so we'll start with staff going around and just putting on the record the attendance.
Rob Frank, staff.
Chris Martins, General Counsel for the PSC.
Amber Grenier, Manager of Regulatory Economics for Otter Tail Power Company.
Lauren Donofrio, Senior Associate General Counsel, Regulatory. I think that's the whole thing. For Otter Tail Power Company.
Okay, so whichever one of you wants to lead off and just go through your presentation, would you prefer questions wait until the end, or as we go have questions directed to you? Or
my plan was as we go, that I'd provide an opportunity for you to ask questions with each tariff, because I'm going to go through each one slowly. All right. Again, my name is Amber Grenier, Manager of Regulatory Economics at Otter Tail Power Company. The purpose of this hearing, or informal hearing, is to explain the proposed tariff revisions and their impact on North Dakota customers. And really guiding this filing is tariff modernization efforts, is kind of the terminology we're using. And really we're just looking for more transparency, consistency, and then ensuring that cost causation is being handled appropriately. The tariff sections that were included in this filing that we are requesting to be updated are Section 502 for special facilities, Section 903 farm service, Sections 1408, 1404, and 1406. That has to do with some air conditioning control provisions. And Section 1301 with the energy adjustment rider, and Section 1402 with the real-time pricing tariff. Moving on to Section 502, the special facilities is part of the company's general rules and regulations, and it addresses charges applied when customers request line extensions or certain non-standard equipment designs or installations. The update that we're requesting here is really just to more clearly distinguish between special facilities and extra facilities. We have received inquiries from large customers on requesting extra facilities, and in order to protect our existing customers, we wanted to make sure that we have something in the general rules and regs that would address the extra facilities. So differentiating between these non-standard facilities that we sometimes encounter with customer installations versus the just some extra ones with large loads.
Okay, I have a first question.
Okay.
I read that. And thanks for this, but can you give me an example of someone in a special facilities and then an extra facilities? Go deeper on that.
So typically, our typical customer that has special facilities is an irrigation customer. That's where we usually see these special facility charges being applicable. In the last North Dakota rate case, we used a formula to develop the rate before it was kind of ad hoc. But based off of the investments, we have this formula that is set and for the life of that customer that they pay towards the special facilities charge.
Okay. And then go ahead. Were you getting expanded on that?
Sure. The way that I think about this, and this is sort of high-level, non-expert way of thinking about it, but I think about this, and I think about lighting, and I think about, you know, if you want, a really fancy, you know, light fixture for your downtown, you know, like the historic-looking ones or something like that, and we normally do a light on a pole. Well, if you want the fancy ones, you can have the fancy ones. But our other customers aren't going to pay for the fancy one. You have to pay the difference between what we normally put in for everybody and the fancy thing that you want. That's special facilities. Extra facilities are where you're not asking for something different than what we normally install. You're just asking for so much of it that it doesn't seem fair to socialize the cost of it to all of our customers. So when I think about this, if we put it in the most simple terms, so let's say we've got a farmer somewhere and they want a barn, they want electricity to their barn, and we do a line drop, and we don't normally charge extra for a line drop. But what if it were 8 miles away? It's still our standard facilities. So under the existing tariff, they could say, well, you have an obligation to serve me, and this is where I'm at, and you have to run that line out as far as I want it because it's not special facilities, so you can't charge me for that specifically. Well, if it's 8 miles, that's going to be quite expensive, and why should other customers foot the bill for that rather than the actual cost causer? So one's about the nature of what we're installing. The other is about the quantity. And it's really just intended to protect our customers from, you know, some of these large loads that may have, you know, tens of millions of dollars in upgrades or just things that are necessary to connect them that really shouldn't be footed by all of our customers. That's the idea.
And let me clarify.
Mm-hmm.
It affects rates then. As the example you gave was the extension of 8 miles, correct? Mm-hmm. So that affects rates.
Well, it doesn't affect rates for... The idea is that it wouldn't affect anybody else's rate. That's the idea. So these are incremental facilities that would be required to connect a new customer. And it's really just recovery of those incremental costs above what it would have cost normally for us to connect a customer. It's the excess charges have to be borne by the new customer who wants to come on the system, who's going to cause an amount of costs that are out of the norm, essentially.
So let me ask it this way. Right now, the current tariff, you don't have the separation of the definitions.
Right.
And now with excessive, you're recovering those costs. So there are rate impacts now to the person requesting it under the excessive facility. So there is I understand you're protecting the other customers, and this one customer who has a request is being charged.
True. So, but that would come before the commission in these kinds of situations. It's never a standard ESA. So it would come to the commission for approval of the ESA that will include how much the excess facilities charge is. So we don't have a standard tariff for this. We do for special facilities, but these kinds of customers that cause these kinds of charges would come to the commission for approval of the ESA and the rates before it was implemented.
Okay. I feel like I'm familiar with this in other businesses where, but with the term aid to construction, where like the first 50 feet or quarter of a mile or mile or some distance of a hookup is kind of standard and absorbed. But if it's beyond that, the customer has to aid in the construction. And you don't have that? If you're serving the barn 8 miles away in your example, you just absorb it all?
Well, what I would say is we have interpreted the existing language to sometimes cover those things. But in reviewing the language, it didn't seem like it was clear enough for customers to understand what special design might mean in the context of special facilities. And, you know, when we're dealing with these very large loads, we're now dealing with very sophisticated parties, you know, if they're bevies of lawyers, and, you know, who may want to pick apart the language to say, well, then you can't charge me for this because of the wording in your tariff. So we were trying to make it far more clear and very, you know, that these are the things that you would have to pay if you want these services from us that are beyond what we normally do. And the example you gave is precisely right. It's just not something that's come up a whole lot thus far for us. But
and I don't know if this matters a whole lot, but it's just confusing me. I got your point, like the special light would be a special facility. But Amber, you mentioned that a lot of your special facilities are irrigation. Isn't that just a higher capacity drop than the 8 miles to the barn in the other example? I mean, there's nothing out there except a pump and you hook it up. What's special about that?
I think it's has to do with it not being our standard equipment that we have.
As far as the capacity of the line.
I don't know if it has to do with the capacity, and I wish I had someone who was more of an expert on this, but I think it's, I mean, we might have a standard transformer, and this might need a special type of transformer. We're not going to have that special transformer may cost more. Well, we're not, that customer now pays for that, the incremental difference of that special transformer or something.
Okay. So all that is paid up front? You would collect it up front?
The customer may choose to do that, or the customer may choose to have a monthly charge on their bill. And that special facilities has been part of our rules and regs for many years. Really, we're just trying to distinguish between special and the extra facilities. So if a customer wants two transformers at their location, we're not going to socialize the second transformer to all of our customers. It's the second transformer will be borne, the cost will be borne by the customer requesting it.
Okay, go ahead.
And then those revenues that we receive offset the costs for other customers. I mean, it doesn't end up in customers' base rates, existing customers' base rates for that extra facility.
So on an extra facility, it would be done through an ESA,
yes,
and that ESA would come before us.
Correct.
And in that ESA would be those upfront costs. Would it also be, when I look at this, additional load to the system? Would it also be a tariff on a rate on what you're charging?
The special facility?
The extra facilities.
So we have an example, kind of an example of this with a load that came on in South Dakota where the revenue through the ESA for the facilities, it doesn't become part of retail rates. It becomes part of other revenue so that it gets the costs. We allocate distribution costs to each of our jurisdictions. And so the idea is that that revenue we get is also allocated to all three of the jurisdictions. There's a distinction between whether it's going to show up in retail rates or other electric revenue that I'm just trying to point out, just so that any cost that may be assigned to North Dakota or allocated to North Dakota also gets that revenue that brings down that cost.
That way we're allocating both the cost and the recovery of the cost the same way, mm-hmm. so that there are no winners and losers in that situation.
Mm-hmm. But to your point, with these extra facilities, it would be part of an ESA that would have to come before the commission, and you would be able to see that number and vet it.
Okay. Thank you.
The other update that I'll just mention was to clarify the distinction between excess expenditures and extra facilities expenditures. So the excess expenditures refer to the costs associated with the special facilities, and the extra facilities expenditures refer to costs associated with extra facilities.
Really, all recovered the same way.
All recovered the same way. And this really is just administrative in nature. It doesn't affect existing base rates or retail rates or the customer requirements.
So special facilities, is that through an ESA and come to us?
It could, but it doesn't have to. There is in section 1.05, I believe it's 1.05, that's where we have our standard ESA. There is a blank in that standard ESA for the for the amount of special facilities. And so it does not necessarily come to the commission.
And the reason why I mm-hmm. asked that question was based on your statement, all recovered the same way.
So using the same methodology as far as how we calculate the associated charge on that customer's bill for recovery. There's no difference between the two in terms of the methodology that's used.
Okay.
And so we're not suggesting any kind of new methodology. It's the same methodology. Mm-hmm. We're just.
When you are calculating the typical customer service within the same customer class, that's on a, you refresh that when you have a customer that's interested in doing one of the extra facilities or special facilities typically. Yeah. And I know in the rate schedule you have listed some of the cost components, but is this like the master list, or is there more to it? Or is there something out there that would be able to, I mean, we can have the list, but just be able to see visibly the cost components in a way that's maybe laid out with, well, what am I trying to say here? To help better understand kind of what the typical customer service is versus the excess? Or is that just going to be per basis on the ESA arrangement? Okay.
Sorry, nodding is not all that helpful for folks who might not be able to see but are called in. So, yes, it is on a one-off basis because these are, with the exception of irrigation, and I will say for irrigation, in the irrigation tariff, it defines the it states that the irrigation facilities shall be special facilities. So that's actually in the tariff and has been for many years. Because I understand that that might seem like it's standard for those customers, but that's long been a provision of that. And that was really done to allow those folks to spread the cost over time, because they might not be able to afford it if they had to pay it all up front. When we get to these, extra facilities, we put together, we do a bespoke estimate for the customer. We, our folks are, this is the transmission study, and this tells us what upgrades are required to the system. And then we look at, what do we have to do for distribution to connect this person? And, this is the estimate of what that's going to cost. It's all laid out and provided to the customer. And then this tariff requires us to provide that to the customer ahead of time. And then the customer gets to choose how they want, whether they want to pay up front or they want to pay over time. That gives them flexibility that way. But they do get a very detailed estimate. But it's impossible for us to really give because we just don't know what the new, the new folks are going to want. And so we have to look at, is this something that is this on par with what we normally do and what we're normally comfortable with socializing? Or is this an instance where you're causing an inordinate amount of cost that is not like in kind to what we normally see, such that you should have more responsibility for those costs you create?
So right now, because it's new, you have no customers on the existing.
We do not have any extra facilities charges in play in North Dakota. I'm not sure if we have any anywhere yet.
No, I don't think we've utilized that.
Yeah, I don't think we have utilized it yet anywhere.
Okay, thank you.
Any additional questions?
Not seeing any.
Okay. The next tariff update that we are requesting has to do with the farm service. Currently, it includes a single rate, and a customer on this rate may receive either a single phase or a three-phase service, and those types of services have distinct facility charges. We are requesting just to introduce a separate rate code for the three-phase customers without changing the rates or the eligibility. It's really just to better identify which customers are single phase, which are three phase, not without having to go a layer deeper into data to determine. Again, the proposed changes are just really administrative in nature, and they do not alter existing rates, charges, or customer requirements. Any questions with that?
I don't think so. Go ahead and continue.
Thank you. Okay. Air conditioning control credit is a voluntary demand response option available to customers with central cooling equipment, giving OTP authorization to control this cooling equipment during periods of system need or very high pricing. What we are requesting is to eliminate the seasonal May through October limitation. This is due to the increasingly variable year-round load patterns and the need for more flexible system operations. It will allow OTT to deploy the cool savings load management when necessary to support system reliability, reduce capacity and energy costs, and mitigate upward pressure on customer rates. We are also requesting to remove the prescribed 15-minute on and 15-minute off schedule and replace it with more flexible cycling authority. The company may apply cycling durations appropriate to the equipment type at the customer's premise, weather conditions, system needs, and customer comfort considerations. Some potential cycling patterns may be like 30 minutes on, 30 minutes off, 15 minutes off, 30 minutes on. I mean, Otter Tail is, well, we are committed to continuing reasonable cycling. We're not going to, our plan is not to turn off a customer for an hour with their cooling equipment. We want to minimize the impact on customer comfort. We still want to limit the control number of hours of control to 300 hours every year. We did, this update will also create alignment with South Dakota, who approved this language in the last rate case we had in South Dakota. And then we have it pending in front of the Minnesota Commission. We are asking also to extend the bill credit, the monthly bill credit. So for it'll go from 5 months to 6 months. A residential customer will be compensated. The compensation will increase from $41.25 annually to $42 annually. We were just trying to get it to a nice round number there. And the commercial customers will still see that $30 annual credit on their bill. This update also impacts a couple of our controlled service rates that have a cycling provision. And that's really, they get a discounted rate, so there's no credit for them in that regard. But it's just to make sure that they're on the same cycling criteria. Any questions on the air conditioning control update that we're requesting?
So when you remove the 15-minute on-off schedule, do you clarify what you're replacing it with, or is it whatever you choose to do on any given event?
We didn't replace the language with a specific cycling because we wanted the flexibility if prices are really high and we need to just hold the control for just another 15 minutes because of the high prices, that we can do that.
But that would also mean that if prices were really high and you wanted to hold it for an extra 6 or 8 hours, you could.
I don't think we would choose to do that because, again, customer comfort is important to us, and we don't want to be shutting them off when customers have requested a cycling. We have non-cycling rates where they have agreed to allow us to shut their equipment off indefinitely. But if they're on the cycling type rate, then we would cycle to make sure that the customer still maintains their comfort.
But not really willing to commit to a specific cycle, like a half hour instead of 15 minutes or something like that. You just want it open-ended.
We don't want to be, I guess, right now we're limited to the 15 minutes off, 15 minutes on. If we wanted to do 30 minutes on, 15 minutes off, or 15 minutes off, 30 minutes on, I mean, that's the type of flexibility we would like to have without having to list it out, is the idea.
And 300 hours annually?
Yes, 300 hours annually, which I don't believe we're hitting that amount.
Do you guys have, like, I think this is kind of to, like, Commissioner Christman's point. I understand what you guys are asking for, the need for flexibility. Like, do you guys have maybe, like, a maximum or like a do not to exceed. So whether that's like 30 minutes or an hour or something like that, like is just something to think about. Like, is there something like that where you could put in that would give you flexibility, but still essentially recognize that the cycling will happen?
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
Yes. We don't have it into the tariff today, but we could add that, that it would not exceed just some amount of time.
Is 30 minutes kind of that point, magical point there, or would you anticipate? I know it's based on system needs, but is there analysis that you've done or looked at to see?
You know, we are in the process of installing our advanced load management system, so it's kind of dependent on what insight that may give us. Because we'll know when a customer has received that load management signal and be able to monitor, like, okay, what happened with the load once the cycling came back on, and what are the savings that we're seeing.
If I was your customer, I'd feel like, okay, adding more time on the calendar to when this could happen, eliminating the 15-minute cycle limit so that conceivably it could be much longer. For 75 cents doesn't seem like a very big reward for them.
Well, the number of hours of control annually that's remaining the same. So
that's really how the constraint.
The credit is based off of that total hours of control that we're allowed to do under the tariff. And so we calculate, okay, what are the avoided costs by being able to control those 300 hours? And then we spread that credit out over whatever. Well, in this case, it was over 5 months is when the air conditioning control could occur. So the number of hours aren't changing for the annual control. It's just the duration or the time period.
I just wanted to add, I mean, it's sort of got its own natural control that way, because we know how many months, you know, we're going to in general use this. And if we shut somebody off for 6 or 8 hours, well, then we're doing that on a regular basis. Well, we're going to use up our 300 hours very, very quickly and then be left with no ability to control in, you know, the second half of the summer, for example. So, you know, there's some natural control there. But also, I think it's important to remember that this is a voluntary rate, and folks can hop off of it if they don't feel like it is giving them, you know, they don't feel like it's worth it. They can hop off, and it is important to us to maintain these kinds of load control devices. And so we are very cognizant of the impact to customers of having these changes, you know, to their equipment, and that they are not going to be very happy or want to be on it if we are creating that kind of disruption that would come with shutting off the hot water for 6 hours.
So it sounds like one, in lieu of a set time, you know, 15 minute on, 15 minute off, 30 on, 30 off, instead of a set time frame, sounds like one control you're proposing then is essentially customer satisfaction, that you have to incentivize participation. Mm-hmm. Okay. The other, I guess, backstop on this, I think, comes down to just what is the reasonable cycling practice analysis? What factors are considered in that?
That's a great question. I think.
Or if there's a definition that is commonly applied, it seems like that's the standard. I'm just trying to get to the heart of what that standard is.
And well, for Otter Tail, it's always been 15 minutes on, 15 minutes off. And I think we intend to really maintain that as much as we can. It's just in the situations where we can see that spike in pricing that we may extend it just a little bit longer to help keep those costs down.
So that suggests an economic kind of balance then.
Yeah.
You know, I guess one of the concerns would be to be able to communicate that to the customer, that it is going to be a slight incremental change at most and not that 6 to 8 hours. Given the terms and condition changes and all that, customer may not really fully understand, just, you know, determined by based on system needs. But I mean, I think I understand the 300 hour limitation wouldn't put you at that, and you want that flexibility. Well, we need 15 more minutes here. But, you know, I think if it could be set within some sort of boundary that's can be communicated to the customer, that would help them probably. I know it's voluntary, but also I could see that it might not be fully fleshed out, especially when they're used to that 15 minutes as the standard prior.
Anything any else on 1408? Okay. Go ahead.
And just as a reminder, the 1404 and 1406 would also see language changes that align with the air conditioning control cycling provisions. Okay. The energy adjustment rider. Okay. The current EAR rate is determined on a system-wide basis using a trailing four-month average of commission-approved recoverable costs for North Dakota. Historically, we have...
Amber, I have to stop you right there. I have a question.
What's that?
So, doing some analysis of, you know, that I received of the calculations and everything, I have a question about... So the EAR rate is using a trailing four-month average of the costs. However... I mean, I might need to do a little bit more analysis, but it seemed to me that what was actually going on within the calculation of the EAR rate is that it's using a summation of the four-month costs, and it's using that within the ratio that it's calculating. So this might be a bit much for this informal right now, but I do need to ask that question right now. Because the impact there would be that if the costs... and the retail sales are not on an average basis, they're going to be, if they're the summation of the 4 months, that's a much larger number. And so when you make adjustments with the asset margins and then the adjustment or the over-under true-up, that's going to be dwarfed then by that. I want to get to the bottom if that's the right thing to do according to the tariff, or if that's something that is not correct, that is actually currently being done. That's my question. So I don't want it to be contentious. I just have a question about that.
Well, I think it's because we're summing the costs and summing the kilowatt hours that it...
Well,
I think it was just a different way of getting to it.
Well, that is a ratio. But however, if you look at the over-under number, that would make a difference, the true-up. Because that true-up just looks at the previous period. It doesn't do a summation or anything like that. That's how much on a monthly basis, correct? That's over, under?
Yeah, on a monthly basis, it's comparing what were the costs, what did we recover, and then any difference in the actual cost we incurred and what we recovered.
Yeah, so for each month, it looks at this that previous month that you get. If it's over or if it's under recovery.
Yeah.
So if you have a ratio, understand that ratio, if you're summing up the 4 months, if you're looking at the historical costs and the energy system use, that would be consistent, right? If you're summing both of those. But that over under then would have a different impact to the EAR rate. If you did an average, that number is just going to be, you know, it's the average of the 4 months. So the over-under would have a greater impact if you just use the average. It gets dwarfed if you're using the summation. And I could be wrong about this. I only noticed it after I received the presentation this morning. So I just needed to bring it up now. It might warrant further investigation as far as that goes.
Okay.
And, you know, hopefully you've been doing it correctly. But if not, I'd like to make sure, because that, if that's the case, and I've been trying to read the tariff and make sense of it, the implication there would be that the energy adjustment rider rate, which you then use to, we'll get into probably, we'll walk through that, but that is going to be overstated, I believe. But more analysis would be warranted.
Okay.
So we'll have to look into that.
Okay. All right. So So we'll just say the current EAR rate is determined on a system basis. And historically, OTP has operated our system, our generation resources on a system basis. However, in recent years, there has been a shift to jurisdictional resources. First example of that is Hoot Lake Solar. That's directly assigned to Minnesota. Coyote Station has moved to available maximum energy designation in MISO for the Minnesota share, and that began January 1st of this year. And then we have Abercrombie Solar and Solway Solar in a Minnesota South Dakota generation resource. Excuse me. So the challenge that this presents in the EAR is when we get through the market settlements. In the past, we call it OTPW, or OTP whole, where all of our generators are bid into the MISO market, our load is bid into that asset owner, and the costs were shared amongst all the states. Well, now we have Minnesota Hoot Lake Solar, where the settlements include generation revenues in there and any wholesale costs. That needs to be carved out to go directly to Minnesota. And we've typically done that through an adjustment in the EAR. We were able to kind of capture that, the generation revenue side of things. But now with Minnesota share of Coyote moving to AME, we have North Dakota and South Dakota still using Coyote for their jurisdictional share, and we have Minnesota share just coming on when needed. And so we needed a way to be able to carve out those costs so that we can allocate them to the Coyote costs to North Dakota and South Dakota. And it's just the variable costs. Minnesota is still contributing towards those fixed fuel costs and fixed costs associated with Coyote.
My concern, I have a lot of questions or concerns about this one.
Yep.
You guys are carving out costs and all that, and people haven't had, I think this would be more appropriate in a rate case, to have people to be able to respond and talk about how things are being allocated to review it. I think we need clear calculations and methodology on how that's going to be done. And mm-hmm. I don't think we have that. Hoot Lake Solar related costs and revenues have been properly addressed under the current methodology, but can you explain in detail why it's not feasible to allow the same methodology to handle Hoot Lake, how you're doing Hoot Lake to Coyote? I mean, there's so many questions regarding this.
It's with the jurisdictional share. So having North Dakota and South Dakota both sharing in that the generation or their portion of Coyote. So we ended up creating different asset owners. So in the past it was OTPW where everything went. But now we have OTPK for the North Dakota and South Dakota generation resources, OTPM for Minnesota, and we call it OTPB for Minnesota, South Dakota. And we have to keep them. We can't split our generators even more between, like, where we would assign a portion of Coyote to just a North Dakota asset owner and a South Dakota asset owner and our other shared load generators into specific state asset owners, because when bidding that into MISO, it will impact when our generators are called on to run, is from what I understand. So we try to maintain as much of the system as a whole, but these one-off generations that are not shared by all three states, we had to handle it slightly differently with these asset owners.
So your system can handle it when there's not an emergency. Your system can calculate by jurisdiction, North Dakota and South Dakota. But then when there's an emergency and Minnesota wants that coal, now it's split three ways.
We have gone through the calculation to ensure that when we have an AME event, mm-hmm. that the costs associated with that AME event are assigned to Minnesota, and the Dakotas continue to have their share of their normal usage of Coyote.
I'm following you there. I am. But mm-hmm. I'm just saying your system can separate, your technology can separate it out, that you have the methodology. And my concern is it hasn't been vetted by, like in a rate case, that methodology, and that it's fair.
Well, the biggest concern by not doing this allocation, because we essentially are assigning, we don't have a North Dakota specific for Coyote and a South Dakota specific for Coyote. We have costs for North Dakota and South Dakota, and we need to do an allocation between the two states to ensure that they're paying their share. But with those settlements, those MISO market settlements, comes the generation revenue. And what we're trying to ensure is that North Dakota and South Dakota customers get all the generation revenue for Coyote, and that Minnesota, it doesn't bleed into Minnesota. Same with the Hoot Lake solar revenues. We do that adjustment now to make sure that Minnesota is receiving those generation revenues for its investment. We're really typically this next slide was kind of trying to give a comparison of the current method versus the proposed method, where we typically take those system costs and divide it by the system kilowatt hours, and we come up with that system EAR rate, and then that's applied to each state's kilowatt hours. Really, we're just changing the order of operations, where we take those system costs and we're going to allocate them to each of the states, and then come up, divide it by each state's kilowatt hours to come up with the jurisdictional EAR rate. So it's really an order of operations and ensuring that the costs and the revenues are being assigned to the appropriate jurisdiction.
So I kind of understand your dilemma, and I'm not saying I agree with just going along with this at this point yet, but there's part of this that I'm not getting what you or Minnesota have in mind. So I can see that somehow or another you have to divide these things up when people are not participating with a certain generator. Mm-hmm. So I get that with Abercrombie, and I get that with Hoot Lake. Mm-hmm. But when you say, we're not participating in this, except when we really need it. And so then Minnesota participates in Coyote, but the whole rest of the time, Coyote doesn't know when that's going to be, so they can't sell their power to someone else. So in the meantime, they operate at less than capacity, raising the costs for their other customers. Or does Minnesota pay for a certain amount of costs when they're not using it?
Yes.
To balance that out?
Yep. Yes.
So do you see that cost being equal? Or if it's emergency, the coal would ramp up and then there would be more usage?
When the AME event is called upon, the coal usage will ramp up, mm-hmm. and then that ramp up of coal usage would be assigned to Minnesota jurisdiction. Mm-hmm. One thing to remember when you're talking market costs, our generation and our load are divorced in the MISO market. We bid our generation separate from our load. So the no matter what generator is on, we're always paying the same day ahead LMPs, and those costs are going to be allocated. It's really the generation revenue that kind of brings down the cost of the energy, and we're just trying to make sure that that goes to the Dakotas versus going to Minnesota.
And MISO doesn't have separate pricing nodes for that, for the jurisdictions or associated with that?
No, we operate under the OTP.OTP pricing zone.
But so they don't have the ability to separate that at all for you?
That it's not where our settlements fall for our load. Our load will, we need to maintain our load going in, being bid into the OTPW, like as a system load asset owner. So just to maintain FTRs and things like that.
Okay. Well, MISO wouldn't have that information for you as far as the jurisdictional differences then?
No,
there's just no feasible way to receive that, and you have to do that calculation.
Correct. We had considered it having different nodes for each jurisdiction, but there was risks for our customers in doing that. From what I understood with the financial transmission rights, and that those have been huge benefits to our existing customers, and that we need to maintain.
You say Coyote moved to available maximum energy designation on the Minnesota share beginning June 1st. How was that determined? Was it through a case in Minnesota?
Yep.
And they said, but we want to call upon Coyote in these MISO declared AME, and we want this start date.
It was part of the order for Minnesota's integrated resource plan.
And that was sort of a way to keep it around versus retirement of that portion.
Correct.
Of Coyote.
So Coyote is, I believe, expected to, at the end of life currently is 2041. And Minnesota has ordered us to exit out of its share of Coyote by 2031. And this is kind of, this AME designation is allowing Otter Tail to bridge that gap to, or not exit sooner, but allow us time to.
Time to figure out what we're going to do with it. and to make sure that there are resources that we may have to replace that. We have a new IRP before the Minnesota Commission, and we have some suggestions as far as, you know, what we would do to replace that capacity for Minnesota. But it's the AME at least allows MISO to call upon it when it's needed for system reliability. It's not that Minnesota doesn't get to pick when it's used. It's up to MISO. MISO can call upon the asset through its AME program when it is required for system reliability, so that at least dealing with the decision that Minnesota has made will not impact reliability for all of our customers, regardless of jurisdiction. We certainly don't want Minnesota's decision to reduce reliability for our customers in the Dakotas, and this also protects that reliability.
Nor that they pay for it if it has to be ramped up, those additional costs.
Yes, and this methodology, it really doesn't change how we actually do the math as far as what costs are in what bucket and how that works. What it does do is it divides instead of pooling everything together and then dividing it out at the end, we're dividing it out at the top and then just following the same math down. And it better aligns to make sure that our Dakota customers aren't bearing extra costs associated with the renewable buildouts, and that Minnesota is paying its fair share and not getting more revenue than it should from the generators that it is not participating in, to protect our other customers from the consequences of certain decisions.
So I know it's a different decade, but we're far enough along in this one. I think it's fair to ask, when you say by 2031, when in 2031?
It's by the end, right?
I think the end of 2031.
I believe it's by the end of 2031. It does not require us to exit the asset in whole. It just means that we can't meet Minnesota's capacity requirements with that asset. Mm-hmm. So we are exploring how to deal with that and what's to be done. It's also important to recall that we don't wholly own Coyote. We have co-owners, and they have the right to call upon those assets as well. So it's a bit complicated, and we want very much to make sure that these transactions are done in a way that's smooth and that doesn't impact reliability for any of our customers.
What is the impact to Otter Tail if we didn't approve this rider?
I don't believe there would be an impact to Otter Tail. There may be less revenues associated with Coyote going to North Dakota customers.
So there is an impact.
To North Dakota customers.
With the current estimation, yeah. It would be a savings for North Dakota customers going forward, yeah.
Approval of the rider.
Yeah, that's correct, with the new methodology.
Well, I think there is an impact on the company in that this new methodology only works if all of our commissions agree, correct? Sorry, it's not my job to ask questions, but I'm asking one anyway.
No, the rate, just like Rob said, if we update this, it's just strictly based off of the same costs that were, and none of the costs changed. It was just based changing the allocation of it. We were calculating a lower rate for North Dakota customers with this update in the methodology. If we maintain the current methodology, we'd be charging that higher rate, which...
Well, that's with the assurance that we're, all the costs are... stay the same, that in the estimate, because it's just a forecast of what you're looking forward to. So it, right now it's a rate decrease, but I guess there's still the potential that it could change. That's correct.
Yes. We aren't with the MISO settlements. We don't have them broken out by asset owner. We can't model that in the forecast. So we are assuming that being allocated to all three states. We were able to, with our Encompass modeling that we use for forecasting purposes, we were able to pull out the expected revenue from the generators and assign those to the appropriate jurisdictions, and that's what's reflected in those reduced rates.
As a proposal, there might be some comfort with the possibility of doing something where, if this new methodology does get approved, to also running the old methodology as well, if that's a possibility, to compare and see if there is any unintended consequences, especially with the different MISO buckets and things like that. I mean, it's a lot of moving pieces, and maybe I think it might have the potential to have a lot of moving pieces there.
Yep.
And so I'm just putting that on the table as a possibility, if that's agreeable, unless you see some other issue with that.
You're thinking maybe in the true-up showing, this is how we have traditionally done it, this is what it would have been, this is what it actually was under the new methodology, and that way we can show, the real-time application and how it worked, and then if there's something that appears out of whack, it'll be clear to everybody, and we can and identifiable and easy to discuss.
Mm-hmm.
And
right. As that informational thing, if that's an option, if people want to do that just before the commission to see.
Mm-hmm.
So it's difficult just to look at, you know, we're going to just do these jurisdictional changes, but without seeing all the moving pieces there and having that run its course a little bit. I mean, that'd bring me a comfort level to mm-hmm. see that for sure.
And I was going to look and say, can you go back and look with your new methodology and run 2025 and say, this is why we're working with this methodology?
The challenge is that we don't have the MISO market settlements to the asset owners. Okay. We can't go back and look at that. It would just, it's all still under that OTP system-wide asset owner.
But going forward, it's still feasible to do that option of looking at both.
Yeah, it's just combining a lot of buckets.
Right.
But
if it, you know, I know it's an additional burden, but it would be beneficial for a while to see how that plays out, I would think. But mm-hmm. that's just a proposal.
So is it fair to say that this has been brought to us in response to Minnesota declaring Coyote available maximum emergency resource, and then the MISO changes, that this is in response to that?
It would be the Coyote move to AME, but also North Dakota not participating in Abercrombie Solar and Solway Solar. That was another thing that pushed us to these asset owner designations.
Okay, so you said if we don't do this, I can't remember exactly how you said it, it'll be less benefits for North Dakotans or more costs for North Dakotans. I'm wondering which that is.
If we don't make the move, there could be more revenue, or could be some amount of the Coyote revenue going to Minnesota customers versus going to the Dakotas.
And in the past, that has gone to the Minnesota customers before their change to AME?
Yep, because we were running the plant as a system asset and not a jurisdictional shared asset.
So not doing this is not an additional cost from the status quo. It is a lost opportunity from the status quo.
It could, yes, could be.
Is what you're saying.
That's what they're projecting at this
yep.
point.
Any other questions?
Okay. You got through the toughest one.
I don't know about that. The last tariff, the pricing update. Is the real-time pricing tariff. This tariff is structured for large general service customers with operational flexibility to adjust their energy usage in response to changing market conditions. So by curtailing or shifting consumption during periods of high market prices, participating customers may better manage energy costs and contribute to the overall system efficiency. And this rate was established back in the early 90s. And how it works is customers would establish a baseline demand level, and they are charged the standard LGS rate at that baseline level. And any usage above or below that, any actual usage above or below the baseline, the customer will be either charged at the real-time pricing tariff, which is an hourly rate, or they would receive a credit if they're below their baseline at that hourly rate. The current pricing methodology was developed prior to the MISO market operations. It's before 1990. It was in the early 90s when it was established. And what it does is it stacks generation units by hour to help determine the hourly price. And on the next slide, or next page, kind of have an image to help describe this. So say that in hour one, OTP's load is below the load or the available load for up to the baseline two or base load two unit, we would price the hourly price for that customer at, for hour one at that whatever the cost of that base load two unit was. In hour two, you can see that OTP's generate or OTP's load is above what load the base load two could generate up to. So then we're going to assign the day ahead MISO market cost is how we determine cost today. And what we are, and this method, the methodology, the current methodology doesn't really reflect actual market costs. And it doesn't reflect OTP's requirement to plan for and purchase or build capacity for load above the baseline for these customers. And just as a reminder that this current tariff is, we have closed it to new customers. That happened back in 2023. So really what the proposed pricing methodology what we're trying to do is mimic the MISO market. And so we would use day-ahead and real-time LMPs, and all customers on this rate would pay for the discrepancies between the day-ahead and real-time market usage. The new pricing methodology incorporates capacity, transmission, and MISO charges. We feel it improves transparency and price signals and aligns customer bills with actual market costs, eliminating possible subsidization by other customers. And we are requesting that it remain closed to new customers as well. So these are just the pricing components of the hourly price. The components highlighted in a red box are what currently is part of the real-time pricing calculation. So you have an hourly price. Now, again, we're using that stacking methodology for our generators. If our load does not exceed the highest price generator, then we price at that highest price generator. But if it does, then we're going to assign the market price to that. The proposed methodology is let's just leave it at the day ahead LMPs, the real-time LMPs, and not do the stacking. That's more reflective of market. We incorporated a capacity adder, which this is based off of MISO seasonal capacity auction. So customers under real-time pricing on the standard tariff, they're only paying up to their baseline, but they may use demand above that baseline, but they're only paying the demand rate at their baseline. So there's excess demand that really they're not paying towards, and that's what that capacity adder is trying to capture, is if you're not shedding your load, you're going to be subject to additional capacity costs with this adder. And it's based off of that MISO seasonal capacity auction price. Schedule one is a $1 per megawatt hour charge that we incur from MISO for scheduling system control and dispatch service. There is a point-to-point transmission service rate that is supposed to, typically you recover transmission costs through your demand charge, again, with it being charged at the two at the baseline. The customer may not contribute fully to the transmission investment, so that's what that's Schedule 8 is intended to capture, is as they're using it on an hourly basis that they are contributing towards those transmission investments. And that is currently part of the tariff. We're continuing that. As Schedule 10, 26A, and other MISO, those are just additional $1 per megawatt hour charges that we incur that would be part of this adder or this hourly pricing. The line loss adder is just recognizing there's different pricing for different voltage levels. And then system contribution, this is part of the current rate, and it would just be a continuation of a system contribution and then the admin charge as part of that rate. Any questions on these adders? There are differences in the rider applicability for this tariff that we are proposing. Because the customer is paying the day-ahead in real-time LMPs, anything above the baseline would not be subject to the North Dakota Energy Adjustment Rider. And because of and with the North Dakota Renewable Resource Cost Recovery Rider, because of the capacity adder, they're paying the MISO seasonal capacity auction price. They wouldn't contribute to the Renewable Resource Cost Recovery Rider or receive the credit that we see today. And with the North Dakota TCR rider, that wouldn't be applicable above the baseline. That Schedule 8 rate comes from MISO Attachment O, and that includes any investment that would be in the transmission rider. So if we were to charge the customers the transmission rider and that Schedule 8, there'd be, it could be considered as double recovery. And then the North Dakota MDT, that's just a per meter charge. Their base below the baseline rate would be covering that one. So above the baseline, they wouldn't contribute to the North Dakota MDT. There's only one meter at the for this rate, not two.
Do you see this being revenue neutral, or and do you see any impacts on customers using this rate right now?
It would. The rate design would not be revenue neutral, and that's why we proposed. It would result in an increase in revenue from customers on this rate, and that is why we proposed providing a credit to existing customers through the renewable rider. It's a percent of bill, just to recognize that we're not trying to get more revenue out of this customer for the company's purpose. It's really just to make sure that the costs that these customers cause that they are paying towards, and that the benefits go to existing customers. And the way that we calculated that was by comparing, because this is a base rate, we determined what was in the last rate case. We calculated what the revenue would have been with the rates at the time of the rate case using this new methodology, and the difference between those two amounts would be credited to customers through the renewable rider.
The credit, is that for that big customer, or is that spread out to all customers? So
to North Dakota customers.
Okay, that's what I thought before, but then when you were talking, I was getting mixed up.
Yeah.
So the one customer on this, the benefits for Otter Tail of serving that customer are shared among all of your customers. And with the new rate, that wouldn't be there any longer for them to share in, and thus the 200, the whatever the amount was, the credit to mm-hmm. the rest of the customers. Because the new tariff doesn't set that up. Is that correct? I'm not really getting what the point of doing all this is.
Oh,
is it going to cost the existing customer the same, and the rest of the customers are going to come out the same? Or is it going to cost the existing customer? more?
It's all dependent on how the existing customer chooses to operate, how they just determine to react to the market costs.
Okay.
If they choose to shed load or shift it, they could see more savings. But that also means less cost to all of our other customers because they're not using at high price periods. They're ideally using at lower price periods, which brings costs down to for everyone. There are other costs that these customers don't contribute to today just because of the rate design in some riders. For example, the North Dakota transmission rider is a demand-only rate. And because this customer's only billed to their baseline demand, there's Schedule 26A costs that we incur on a dollar per megawatt hour basis that the customer's not contributing towards under the existing rate. And so we included that as an adder so that they contribute to that. And that would be credited through the TCR so that we won't get double recovery of those types of costs. So we've gone through to make sure, we've gone through each of the adders to make sure it's recovering the appropriate costs from the customer and that it there's a mechanism or a way to get it to the existing customers.
No, I think I understand you better.
If I could ask the question of, could you go through kind of and tell us why there's the timing of this being filed now, this particular change in the real-time pricing? You know, we had the old methodology for a long time. Are there just particular factors that this wasn't, you know, in the previous rate case or that you're not holding it until the next rate case? Considering that there are, you know, obviously when you change this, it will have multiple different customer impacts and things, and that typically is something that should be looked in within that context, a full rate case to see all of the effects and if there's any other unintended adverse effects or whatnot.
So we had closed this in 2023. Prior to that, there wasn't really, we felt that the real-time pricing tariff was providing a good approximation for the cost causation. But, you know, as MISO continues to evolve and new markets are introduced, we're seeing more of a divergence with how the current methodology and how MISO operates. And we've been taking our time to ensure that we have all the appropriate costs as part of this tariff and making sure that we are designing it appropriately. It wasn't ready for the North Dakota rate case. We did file the same exact rate design with the South Dakota Commission. It really was just a timing issue of making sure we brought forth the right rate design and didn't rush it and really thought through how this was really going to work for our customers and for the administrative component on Otter Tail side.
We currently have one customer on this rate in North Dakota. And the way that I think about this, especially as MISO has gone to their seasonal capacity, we as a utility benefited from not having seasonal capacity because we're a winter peaking utility. But MISO has always worked on a summer peak. So we had a benefit at MISO of having our highest usage at a lower priced point and not having, being peaking at the time of the system peak. But now with the seasonal, we don't have that benefit anymore. So because there's a peak set at each period. We still benefit from having a lower cost at the time that we're causing our peak, but it doesn't. We don't have as much flexibility as we used to to allow a customer to sort of ride along, which is what these folks have been doing. These folks have been getting a great deal, and that's great. But when that great deal starts coming at the cost of other customers and other customers having to pick up more of the bill, that is a problem and not something that was intended for this rate. Changes in how MISO is charging for certain things, and there's just been a lot of volatility in differences between the day ahead and real time pricing that the current methodology doesn't take into account. So if the customer says, I'm going to use 10 megawatts, and we bid that in and we pay the system cost for those 10 megawatts, then they actually use 11 megawatts. The day ahead price is not the same as the real time price. But we're only charging the customer either our stack price or the day ahead price, not that real time price. So to the extent that prices are higher in real time than they were in the day ahead, which often happens in the summer with storms, with kinds of things that roll across, that differential isn't being charged to this customer. It ends up being spread on all of our customers in the year. Energy adjustment rider. So this, again, eliminates the potential for a subsidy. However, the customer can also more appropriately forecast their usage and avoid any additional cost by tailoring their usage to market prices and responding to market signals. It's also a voluntary rate that they could hop off of if they don't like it. But it's just become increasingly more problematic over time with the changes in MISO that we really do not want our other customers subsidizing any particular customer.
I understand that. Thanks for that explanation. If the one existing customer hopped off, then what?
We would likely choose to close the rate. The real-time pricing was initially developed as a economic development type of rate, mm-hmm. and encouraging customers to build in our territory and manage their load. We think that there's other tariffs that would be better utilized for economic development purposes.
Okay, thank you.
Rob or Chris, do you have any questions?
Okay. So with the real-time pricing request, we are asking to continue to not allow new customers onto the tariff, credit the renewable resource rider for the difference between the existing rate design from the last rate case and the proposed rate design using the 2024 rates and kilowatt hours used in OTP's last rate case. And this would be in place until the next rate case. So it would be the same credit every year until we file another rate case. We'd also credit Schedule 26A costs that are recovered through this rate in the TCR to prevent double recovery. And we're also proposing with this change that we would remove these day-ahead and real-time costs, or what we would take what we collect from the customer through the day-ahead and real-time component of the bill and reduce the EAR cost, but also remove those kilowatt hours associated with this real-time pricing, just so that these costs aren't part of that EAR rate, and nor are the kilowatt hours. It would just be the customers that are or the costs and the kilowatt hours that are attributable to the EAR rate. So for conclusion, OTP respectfully requests the North Dakota Commission approve the following updates to sections 502 for special Facilities, Section 903 for Farm Service, Sections 1408, 1404, and 1406 for the cycling provisions, Section 1301 with the EAR rider, or energy adjustment rider, and then Section 1402 with the real-time pricing tariff. If there's any more questions,
good answer. One more time for questions. Was there something you were going to go through on the real-time activity?
Yeah. So
the informal. Or?
The last I just had these in case you had a question on how the real-time pricing tariff was going to work. This is just a graphic where the customer would let OTP know the day ahead what they expect their load to be. OTP then submits that as part of its load bid into the MISO market. MISO lets us know by about 12:30 every day what the pricing is going to be for the next day. And then we would, and what usage cleared. And we would just provide that to the customer, letting them know here's the day ahead prices. And we would include our adders. And that's how they can plan for the next day, because they might see some high costs and say, you know what, we're going to back that down because we want to avoid those costs. The real time, it gets a little more tricky because we don't have a way to provide those real time prices to customers, but MISO does have the map, and that's what's shown here. The Minnesota hub is a good indicator for the real-time price at OTP. That node would be around, so that can help the customers understand, like, get a gauge as to where the real-time prices are at for them. So then they can monitor that real-time market, and again, if the real-time prices start going low, they may want to ramp up, because now if they go above their day ahead bid, they're going to pay that lower real-time price. But if real-time prices are going up higher, they may want to back down their load, because then they're going to see a benefit to doing that.
So that explains why this is here as part of our record.
Yep.
So then one more time, any questions on that? Okay, does anyone object to the evidence produced today becoming part of the official record upon which a decision will be made?
None for me.
None for OTP.
Okay, so the evidence produced today will become part of our official record. Does anyone have anything else to add? If not, then this informal hearing in case number PU-26-98 is concluded. Thank you, everyone.
Thank you.